Collective. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports. Joined alongside me, Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, and Will Birchfield from 97.1 The Ticket. Colton from The Athletic is usually joining us, having some mic issues, so we'll hopefully Colton gets that figured out, but the crew is back.
Okay. Taking the heat off me.
Second week, yeah. It's you know, Colton's battling, so hopefully everything goes smooth for him, but we're in the second week now of free agency, and things are starting to kind of transpire. And actually, speaking of the man himself, look at him, he's in there. All right, let's bring him in here. Let me get this fixed for you guys. So, bang, get him in here. Oh, wow. Look at that. And Colton Pouncey. How you doing, Colton?
Pretty good. Sorry, I had some technical difficulties there. We're good now. I think.
Crew's here. We're here to recap everything that's been happening. So, should be a good show tonight, fellas. A lot of things. Even before this show, we're getting signings. So, and you guys are in the midst of grinding, talking to the player. So, I'm sure it's been more of an interesting week now, kind of late last week, early this week. So people, I think, are starting to kind of less crash outs, I think, from some fans, which is good news.
From who? Who's crashing out?
I am actually the leader of the crash out, like Lions fandom. So I'm kind of speaking for the people here. Less crash outs based on my calculations. So
you've earned the right. You're the expert.
Yeah. I've been doing it for a while, so I can speak on this matter. So, yeah.
I described this to somebody last week. Like, the first week of free agency is like where firefighters just trying to put out an inferno. Like, it's just this raging fire that you can't rest, and you come out and you're just covered in ash and soot and exhausted. And then week two is like just a bunch of brush fires. You're just trying to make sure it doesn't turn into another inferno. Bunch of one-year deals. You don't worry about it. Maybe you'll get to it in an hour when you're not busy. It's always something, but you know, I don't feel as stressed and as tired as I did when we spoke last week.
That's always the best part when you hit the second wave of free agency. You can be like, all right, this guy's signing, you know, whatever. We're going to hear about it in 20 minutes when the team announces it instead of that long gap. So feeling better for sure. I agree with that.
Let's rock.
So, yeah, we can get started. I mean, they picked up an edge rusher. I think that was the center of probably most crash outs. They did sign in what I believe is an upgrade. I know some people were still probably trying to poo-poo on it, but diving into DJ Wonnum, seems like he's got a ton of versatility and at least more production than AQM had before he got to Detroit. Heading into Detroit, DJ Wonnum's been a really productive player. So your guys' thoughts on the Lions kind of finally addressing that spot? I know AQM signed elsewhere and people were talking about the contract, but DJ Wonnum got pretty much a similar deal there, 1 year up to $6 million. So what is kind of your guys' reaction to the signing? What can you bring to the Lions?
I'm really glad we're having this conversation, you know, 22 hours after it was announced, because, you know, it wasn't that I was entirely unfamiliar with the name, but I was unfamiliar with the game, I think is probably the appropriate way to describe it. And, you know, it gave me some time too, as, you know, Colton's favorite. I dove into some film, watched about five games of Wonnum just to get a feel for what this guy's about. And I would not put him in the same bucket as AQM. I don't feel like they fill the same need in the scheme. I don't feel like they would be utilized the same here. And as I watched the tape and I kind of wrapped it up, I said, I think this guy is what they wanted Josh Pascal to be. I don't think he's quite as good as peak Marcus Davenport. Not that we ever saw that, but like the vision of Marcus Davenport, but at least the vision of Josh Pascal. And I would not use the term edge rusher. I think I would use the term edge defender.
Edge setter.
I think the run defense is the plus. I mean, this is a guy that you're going to feel really good about on first and second down. I think the pass rush leaves quite a bit to be desired. I think he's a little one-dimensional, and that one dimension doesn't really pop. But you're still, this is a guy that you can play 500 to 700 snaps. He can eat up a pretty large workload. He can do the run defense stuff really well and solve that need. But, you know, we talked about this before. There are three quote unquote edges on the roster. I looked it up with Will this week. There were eight going into training camp last year, probably going to add some rookies, but they still need more. And what they need more of is pass rush.
Yeah. I think, you know, you brought up Davenport. Davenport was a first-round pick. So, like, what Davenport was supposed to be is a guy that can win with power, win against the run, and he probably had a little bit more pass rush juice just because of the pedigree of being a first round pick. One of them was not that guy coming out of college, but what he can be, give you maybe some of that. And obviously Davenport's injuries made it so that you couldn't re-sign him, but you needed someone that can handle early downs for you and set an edge and defend against the run. I think one of them can do that for sure. Now I think he's a guy that's going to win kind of from effort, things funneling back his way. So I think he'll be at his best with, you know, an all pro level defender opposite of him. And the Lions have that in Aiden Hutchinson. So when you're talking about his profile, 6'5", like 260-ish. He's got like the 33, 34 inch arms. Not particularly flashy, but can rush from different stances and alignments. His best seasons, I believe, were with the Vikings, 8 sacks in 2021, 8 sacks in 2023. Was playing a lot for the Panthers last year. So he's a guy that can step in on early downs and do the dirty work. That's kind of how I see it. He's not the flashiest player. He's not the speed guy, but he can handle his own against the run. He can maybe get you some effort sacks here and there. But I would still like to see the Lions go out and add a speed guy, whether that's in the draft or even if it's not a speed guy, maybe player in the second round that can be your long-term maybe answer, hopefully, next to Aiden Hutchinson, because this is a one-year deal. And you can always find guys like one of them in free agency on a one-year deal. You can always find those types of early down defenders. But I still think they need an answer, and this doesn't really solve the long-term issue, but it does put a Band-Aid on some of their deficiencies from last year. Because if you look at what they did last year, 21st in yards per rush at 4.4. When Al-Qaeni Muhammad was on the field, they allowed 4.8 yards per rush, and that would have ranked 27th over the course of a full season. When AQM wasn't on the field, that went down to 4.2, which would rank, that would have ranked 14th. Their defensive rushing success rate, I believe, was 62.3%, and that was 8th in the NFL without Muhammad, and it dropped to 24th with him on the field. So clearly, they didn't trust AQM to get the job done against the run. And we saw that based on his snap usage. Like, he would disappear against teams that could run the ball because the Lions didn't trust him to be out there. And, you know, I understand you could say only $6 million for him. I felt like if the Lions wanted him back, they could have given him an offer that would have brought him back. And he basically said that in locker room cleanout day. He's like, if they value me, I'll be back here. If not, I'll be somewhere else. That's essentially what he said. Maybe no state income tax in Florida, maybe sweeten that deal, maybe a better opportunity down there for him. But, they kind of said it with their usage of him last year, how they felt. And so to get a guy like this that can help you on early downs, I think it makes sense, but you still got to go out and get a speed rusher, a guy that can add a little bit more pass rush juice to the operation.
Yeah, AQM also said at his introductory press conference in Tampa that didn't seem to be a whole lot of interest from the Lions in bringing him back. I mean, he was asked a version of that question and was like, yeah, I don't really know, and I don't really care. I'm here in Tampa now. And then went on to note that they do indeed play the Lions this coming season, sort of framing that game as a bit of a grudge match, if you want to call it that. But, yeah, I don't think the Lions ever expressed a real desire to bring him back. And to your point, Colton, I still think it would behoove them to sign that speed rusher that I think we all agree they need, only because if and when they make their investment at edge rusher, likely early in the draft, it's going to be for the kind of guy they value, which is going to look something more like, say, a Keldrick Falk, which is, again, that bodied edge setting, can move inside pocket crusher than the speed rusher. So I still think someone like Von Miller makes sense as a complement to Wanham, just because I don't trust the Lions based on their values to invest a premium draft asset in a speed rusher. So might as well complete the duo with a veteran free agent. Look, I think the Lions were disgusted by what they saw out of their run defense in the final month of last season. I don't feel like it's a stretch to say that. Brad made a point of it at his end of season press conference. I know it grated on Dan. I know Shep would just remove the 37 most explosive rushing plays and feel like the run defense did a pretty good job. But once again, you can't do that. And that was ultimately their undoing last year. They were just getting gouged on the ground, as we analyzed right here on this podcast. And I want to come back to this point later in the show, because I think it applies to more than just Wanham, but Wanham is probably the perfect embodiment of it. They are committed to restoring their ability to defend the run. And obviously, as you guys have pointed out, that's what he does best. I'll make the point with a couple different stats. PFF tracks something called average depth of tackle. So just the yards away from the line of scrimmage you are when you bring a player down. And Al-Quadeen Muhammad ranked dead last among qualified edge defenders last year in average depth of tackle against the run, 7.5 yards from the line of scrimmage. And I don't mean to pick on him here because that's simply not his game. I raise it to contrast it with Wanham, who was middle of the pack in average depth of tackle, but was checked in at 2.5 yards, which was 5 yards better than the average Muhammad tackle. And then PFF also tracks run stops, and Muhammad was tied for last in run stops last year among edge defenders with just 2. Now, that's a bit more of a counting statistic, and part of that is just the fact Lions did not trust him to play the run. But again, contrasted to Wanham, who had 19 run stops, which ranked 11th, you get an idea of what the Lions are valuing here and what they are devaluing in some ways in letting AQM walk and replacing him with Wanham.
First, let me compliment both those statistical drops. Really, really great numbers. I think add context to the situation. And I want to, you know, echo what Will said here. I don't change my opinion. Like, I believe that AQM was valuable. I believe he was worth bringing back. I believe he was worth the contract he got. But when you start kind of looking at things through the lens of hindsight, right? Like, I still think back to kind of a late training camp practice where they were indoors and like the coaches were just all over AQM for a couple poor run fits that led to some big runs. You look at the early season where they're using him in like the nose tackle alignment, can only get him on the field for 6 or 7 snaps. You look at the sequence, which we talked about on this show, where it was like a 5-game stretch where he had no sacks and he just wasn't playing. We're like, got to get this guy out here more. And you start to like think about it that way. You're like, yeah, the coaches didn't really ever believe in him. And he proved them wrong in finding success regardless, certainly as a pass rusher. But when you are turning, I believe, 32 this offseason, when you don't have the track record of success, it's easy to say, maybe we don't make that investment, right? Like maybe that's not the best way to spend our money. And so I think maybe I'm less surprised thinking about it from that way. But I mean, sure, I think having a Wanham AQM combination on edge 2 is probably ideal. Maybe you can't spend $6 million on that compliment. Maybe you need to find another $1 to $2 million compliment that AQM was last year. I do want to say, you know, watching the Wanham tape, you talk about the length, like it shows up in the run stopping. The way he sets the edge, the way he extends the blocker off his body, the way he sheds and stops, this consistency in the gaps was just down in and down out was really impressive. I was surprised that the numbers or the grades, I guess, of PFF didn't align, but you know, that happens sometimes when you watch it with your own eyes. Certainly their grades did align with the pass rush. That length disappears when a blocker gets a hand into his chest, like the rep's kind of over. But what he does do well as a pass rusher, if you will, is he stays tight on his bend. And what that does is it prohibits escape lanes. And in a league where there are so many mobile quarterbacks and you have an edge rusher that is an elite talent on the opposite side, if the guy can't escape, that's the job, right? Like your job is to funnel everything to Aiden, to prevent everything getting away from Aiden. And I think that, you know, that's where Wanham can be successful on pass downs, whether he's getting the sack or not, he's going to be funneling it to the other guys and not giving those quarterbacks a way to escape it.
Yeah, can I just say I am really curious to see where Cam Jordan lands, and I'm not going to rule out the possibility of him landing here. It feels a little bit less likely after they've allocated this money to Wanham, but to go back to average depth of tackle against the run and just general run defense prowess. James Jordan was metrically one of the best run defenders in the NFL last season. He has been so for most of his career. His average depth of tackle against the run was equivalent to Wanham's, 2.5. And oh, by the way, he also had 10.5 sacks. And I just look at a player like that and feel like, man, if he signs elsewhere, surely they could have found the money on a likely one-year deal to sign a player who would complete the vision that we're talking about now. Like, Wanham feels like one half of what Cam Jordan could be for the Lions and will be for his next team. And maybe it still is the Lions. I don't want to rule that out, but God, it just feels like that is such a perfect stylistic fit for this defense. And then I don't know, like the Wanham pass rush productivity kind of intrigues me. Like, he has 2 8 sack seasons on his resume. And if you take his pace in 2024, when he only played 8 games, he was on an 8 sack pace. Now, he was coming off a torn quad against the Vikings the year prior. And I'm sure that, you know, sounds the alarm bell for every Lions fan that has PTSD when it comes to injured defensive linemen. But like, his resume would look a little bit different probably with the full season in 2024. And you might feel a little bit more optimistic about some of the pass rush ability. I guess to contradict myself, I think a lot of people, some people anyways, have assumed that, you know, his pass rush productivity will suddenly jump when he's playing across from Hutchinson and not having to deal with double teams. He wasn't dealing with double teams in Carolina. I just want to maybe refute some of that notion. Like, he actually saw fewer double teams last year than Al-Quadin Muhammad did on a rate basis. So like, he was getting all kinds of one-on-ones in that defense, the same kind of one-on-ones that you would assume he'll get here. Now maybe when Hutch is triple teamed as he is sometimes, that'll open up more opportunities for Wanham, but I don't think it's as simple as saying playing across from an all-pro defensive end is going to unlock the pass rush juice that Wanham might have.
Yeah. Just going back to Cam Jordan real quick, it almost is like, if you combine Wanham and AQM, it's like you're getting like,
that's literally Cam what Jordan. I'm saying. Like, yeah. That's the guy.
Like, you do have, it is half a player. I think you said it perfectly there. I mean, and like, the thing with the defensive structure, it's like, and what they want out of that role, I don't necessarily hate it. Like, I know we've been talking about, oh, they could use some more pass rush shoes, they could use this, they could use that. I don't necessarily hate what the vision, I guess, that they are putting out there, which is a guy that can set the edge, funnel things back, keep things contained for even the interior guys like Aleem when he's playing back at the level that we know he can play. You got Hutch wreaking havoc on the other end. Like, I see the vision, like, keep everything in the pocket, keep everything contained, let your linebackers and interior guys make plays. I totally understand that. It's just they've missed on the type of player that they've went out and got. And part of that is because, you know, they say, oh, we have Hutch, you know, he can do damage. We don't really need like a stud next to him. And I understand that logic too, because you have to pay a lot of these dudes. But running it back with Marcus Davenport after he was injured and only played like 2.5 games the first time around, that obviously backfired, because he was not, even when he did play, he was a shell of what he once was, even in years past. Like, what we saw in training camp from Davenport his first year, I think a lot of us were like, man, this guy could be really good if he stays healthy. And I'm sure a lot of other beat writers are saying that in past years when he was playing for their teams. But to get a guy like Wanham, like, yeah, it's not the flashiest thing. If he can handle those early down runs and then you get a speed guy on maybe on day 3 even, like, I'd be pretty happy with that for them. I think that would make a lot of sense. I still think you need that long-term answer, but I don't hate the vision. I don't hate the plan, I guess, in place. You just have to – you can't miss on that guy, and they've missed for 2 years in a row. And even a guy like Al-Quadin was signed to be a number 3 rusher. He was not signed to play as much as he did last year. He ends up getting a production boost just playing across from Hutch, and that got him an opportunity somewhere else, but he was not the stylistic fit here. So I understand why he left and why they moved on, but they still got to find that guy, and they haven't found the complete, you know, full player yet, as you mentioned, Virgie.
Maybe I'm looking at this wrong, but I think Wanham immediately ruled out Cam Jordan. It's off the table to me. I think there's too much overlap in how they're used. I don't think of Cam Jordan as an elite pass rusher. I understand the 10.5 sacks, but I think the pressure to sack ratio was kind of lopsided last year, and maybe not reflective of the pass rush talent he is at this stage of his career. You know, you talk 2024, 17 starts, he had 28 pressures. I think Wonnum had 26 last year. This year it was 36. Wonnum had 31. And you see this huge discrepancy in sacks, but, you know, sometimes those can be fluky. I'm more interested in kind of the consistency of how often they're affecting the quarterback on top of the sacks. And so, you know, if Jordan's looking for 6, 8, 10 million to kind of close out his career, and Lord knows he deserves it. And I selfishly wanted Cam Jordan here because he's obviously an extraordinary interview and leader on top of, you know, the performance. But I think they very conscientiously went with Wonnum over Jordan, not as a potential compliment. I think the compliment's going to be a different stylistic player, again, in that Muhammad, I don't know who else is out there right now, Hassan Reddick, Leonard Floyd, Von Miller, you know, it's going to be more of that guy that can affect the pocket on third downs when they need it.
Yeah, I would also just say in defense of Cam Jordan's pass rush skills, as Jay Raj attacks him up there in the the upper quadrant.
Yeah. Caps lock it.
It's also a skill to get home. And, you know, there's plenty of pass rushers in the NFL that rack up pressures but don't have the sacks to go with it. And it's meaningful when you can translate pressure into sacks like that. That's definitely something this defense has been missing for the past few years. It's why some of this fan base has begun waging a war on the quarterback pressure stats, because far too often it has felt hollow for this defense, at least when it's measured in the sack column. So I don't know, just an aside, but like Cam Jordan is a player with, I think, 7 or 8 double digit sack seasons on his resume. And like, I know the numbers were down for him in 23 and 24, but he bounced back to, you know, closer to his average last year. So I would trust in the body of work and just say that I think it counts when you can finish, when you can get home and convert pressure into a sack.
Yeah. We'll agree to disagree. I'm going to believe in the 6 sacks, the 2 previous years at age 34 and 35. Like I don't want to say he's cooked, because clearly 10 sacks says you're not cooked, but, look, I'm skeptical that the 10.5 is real.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
What about a production production boost playing next to Hutch in that scenario? Would that help him?
I mean, I think it helps anybody, right?
I would buy into that personally, but I mean, I understand he's 37. Yeah. So,
what about a quote boost for us? That's all.
Yeah, baby, that's all we need. We got Noah Meek. What are we gonna do?
Yeah.
Well, tougher.
Well, speaking of Amik, you have another man who can play nickel, Roger McCreary, they signed, and they've kind of addressed secondary, which I do want to get your guys's, because last week we talked about the defense, and I know Calvin Shepard at the combine spoke to you guys, and, you know, he talked about his philosophy when it comes to, you know, base defense. It seems like you're signing some guys that can play nickel, and listen, I'm just a guy who crashes out, all right? So I'm just going to tell you, I'm looking at this linebacker crew. I'm only seeing 2 starters, legit starters. So your guys' opinion on just this defense, the secondary guys coming in, could it maybe foreshadow using more nickel, or am I just crazy? But what's your guys' opinion on some of the secondary guys they've brought in to kind of back up? Because I like it, because you're not depending on a guy like Ennis Rakestraw. If he ends up being something, great. But they added some nice depth there in the secondary.
In the spirit of taking some Twitter feedback, Colton, why don't you lead us off on this one? Let's spread the love on the leadoff.
What did they say on Twitter?
Yeah, they said change up the order to avoid some of the. I agree. I think it's good feedback. Just tough to incorporate on the fly. So I'm trying to incorporate on the fly. I'm trying to get a second assist here off of Jeff.
Yeah. Always good to cater to the demands of Twitter. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, always. Real.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the nickel position. I've been of the opinion that they should go get, and I know it sounds easy to say, but like kind of the do-it-all kind of nickel. And I think those guys are available every year. I don't want to say a Brian Branch, because that sounds too easy and simplified. But a player that has that versatility, or even, you know, a linebacker safety nickel type that can kind of rotate and play different spots. And I think that need, you know, you could argue whether they need it now or maybe they don't. Obviously, they signed some guys. Roger McCreary is a guy that can absolutely step in and play nickel right away. I like the idea to bring him in and have him compete with Ennis Raystraw. You know, last time we talked to coaches about Ennis, it was like, oh, well, we like him more on the outside. We're going to let him develop over on the outside and kind of back up Terrion and DJ. And then we'll have a Meek just be our like base nickel. And that's kind of the operation we want to go with. I would venture to guess, like, if you have the second round pick that's not going to see the field at outside cornerback and your starting nickel just left, then move Ennis back there and let him compete and let him do it against a guy like Roger McCreary. I really like the move to do that. Now, those two are sort of cornerbacks. They're not like safety linebacker types, like the big nickel role. I still think they need like a better coverage linebacker, because when you lose a guy like Alex Anzalone, who is so good in coverage, and you replace him right now, at least with a guy like Malcolm Rodriguez, who's more of a first, second down run defender, it leaves you a little bit vulnerable in some situations. So, you know, maybe they just only use nickel on third down passing situations, but I would like to see another versatile player that's either a linebacker or safety there. But in terms of that position, like, I do like the bodies that they brought in. Like, Roger McCreary is a guy that I think has some like upside. I think he could be a better fit in this situation than he has been in the past. I got like Christian Izian, who can play nickel, who can play safety. I did a depth chart the other day. I had Izian listed as a safety just because I think McCreary is probably a better fit at nickel. But they can both play that role depending where the coaching staff wants to put them. So, you know, Shep made it clear, like, hey, I'm not just going to be out here chasing fads or trying to copy what Mike McDonald did over there. That's not really my style. We're going to do what works best for us. And it seems like they want to stick to the status quo in that sense. So, you know, we'll see who ends up winning and I guess coming out victorious in that battle. But I do anticipate a battle between Ennis, McCreary, maybe Izzy, and if they want to put him at nickel versus safety.
Go ahead, J-Raj.
Yeah, see, our order's out of whack, and now nobody knows when to talk.
No, I get it. I'll take it. Like, I think the word I would use, Colton, is they lack playmaking with the 11th defender. They just do, and it's not because Anzalone left, because maybe that was something that I felt Anzalone lacked too. I mean, he brought an energy. He brought, you know, the ability to get people on the same page. Assignment sound, the 9 pass breakups were really nice last year, but like, how many forced fumbles, how many sacks, how many interceptions, how many tackles for loss? Like, they weren't big numbers from that 11th defender spot. And I guess maybe Derek Barnes, the 11th defender in that conversation, but still, same point, right? Mm-hmm. Now you take Amik Robertson out of the equation, and if nothing else, like, the dude forced fumbles at a pretty ridiculous rate. And so you bring in Izian and McCreary, who are guys that, you know, frankly, don't get their hands on a lot of passes. Not a lot of pass breakups, not a lot of interceptions. Izian, really jarring, has given up 79.5% completion percentage when targeted in his career. I don't think that is reflective of the player that he is, but it's certainly part of the profile, right? And I think Malcolm Rodriguez is exceptionally instinctual coming downhill. I think his ability to diagnose plays has always been his superpower. I think he reads kind of guard pulls and all the keys really, really well. He's a phenomenal tackler, throws in a hip toss every once in a while for the highlight reel, which we all love. But like, in terms of playmaking, show me it. It's not on the tape, right? It's not on the tape. It's not on the stat sheet. There's not TFLs. There's not interceptions. There's not forced fumbles. And so they don't have that guy on the roster, and maybe every team wants that guy on that roster, that dynamic, you know, guy that can force a fumble or pick off a pass or, you know, be a really effective blitzer. I'm sure every team covers the we're going to keep using his name, right? Nick Uminora, but like, that's what they need. And so when we talk about the draft coming up, and I know you've mentioned the Pitt linebacker, Kyle Lewis, as kind of like a guy in that mix. Right. But like,
our guy. I was trying not to say his name for once, but yes.
Yeah. But I get that you love him. I honestly, I haven't watched him yet, but like, I'm interested based on your love of him. To me, when you get to pick 50 in this draft in the second round, and I know, like, we keep talking about tackle edge. Well, shit, if an 11th defender, whether that's a safety or a slot corner or a versatile linebacker, is the best player on your board there, I think that can help the defense more now and into the future than taking, you know, I think once you get to the edges at 50, like it's like drafting a quarterback in the fourth round. Like you're really hoping and praying that the skill set translates to production. And more often than not, you're not going to find your Nick Benito. You're going to find your Josh Pascal. Right. And so I would rather see them take the guy where we laugh about it as like, or not laugh about it, but like talk about positional value. This is a point that Nolan Bianchi, our colleague at Detroit News, says all the time. Like, you could always find that star safety in the second round. Like, great. If there's a Brian Branch-esque player in the second round, take that guy, become a better football team.
Might be Jalen Kilgore. I mean, he might be a third rounder or early day three, but that's another name to watch that fits the profile of player that we're all talking about here.
Name, by the way.
Epic name, right? Just to, I guess, broaden what I said off the top, I think wrong or right, the Lions are making a clear commitment to their run defense this offseason, and that includes the defensive backs that they have signed in free agency. And I think they believe that their defense was best in 2023, despite some of the overall numbers, and, you know, maybe first half of 2024 and first half of last season, when they were smothering teams on the ground and forcing them to play one-handed, and that got away from them last season. And, you know, it honestly coincided with injuries in the secondary, kind of counterintuitively piling up. And, you know, we've covered Wonnum here and what he adds to their run defense. But as you guys pointed out, like Izzy and McCreary might not be real assets in coverage, which doesn't sound like a reason to sign a corner or a nickel. And just to spell it out, like J-Rod, you mentioned the completion percentage allowed by Izzy and was like a career 79%. Well, McCreary last season was at 82%, which was the second highest among qualified cornerbacks in the NFL. But what both of them do really well is defend the run and physically and aggressively, especially near the line. Like you look at when Izzy and played mostly nickel, mostly in the slot as a rookie with Tampa in 2023. He was one of the top run defenders in the NFL that year by PFF grade. He ranked fifth overall among corners, and Brian Branch ranked fourth. And you listen to McCreary, you talk to McCreary, and you dig into some of his stats and tape, and that's a guy that is unafraid, despite his size, to make plays against the run. Like I was talking to him yesterday, And he was like, the plays, honestly, that I look to the most are tackles for loss. And maybe that's just because, as you pointed out, he only has like two career interceptions. But his 2024 season, I believe it was, with Tennessee, he was tied for first in the NFL among corners in tackles for loss. He was making a lot of plays in the backfield and most of them against the run. And, you know, I think they reflect some of the value that Brian Branch brought to the Lions in 2023. And when you listen to Shep, he intends to deploy Brian Branch as a safety. Like that's how he views him. He was clear about that point at the combine when Emin Wari's name came up and the possibility of Branch playing that role. Shep was like, I think he was asked literally, how do you see Brian Branch maybe vis-a-vis Emin Wari? And Shep was like, in his very defiant, adamant Shep tome, I see him as one of the best safeties in the NFL. Like I'm playing him at safety. He's not a nickel. And I think the Lions signed a couple guys in McCreary and Izian who can at least bring some of the run thumping near the line of scrimmage that the Lions had in Branch in 2023 and could afford to add to this defense. Again, the way they played, I'll use Brad's words, against the run down the stretch last season was, as he said, uncharacteristic. You know, he said, we've normally been very good in run defense and it was just not clicking. It was just not consistent. Like he was bothered by that. He was peeved by it. And it's why they lost some of those games they couldn't afford to lose in December. And I think this is them, wrong or right, recalibrating as a defense to get back to their identity and who they were as sort of a run smothering unit in 2023, 2024, and into the first half of 2025.
Maybe it's because he's out of sight and out of mind, right? And he's gonna miss the start of the season likely and maybe up to the first half. But I don't know. Maybe we're being dismissive of Brian Branch already being that guy. And Shep can say what he wants, but the actions already suggest they were using him that way, right? Like he was 53 snaps on the line of scrimmage. He was 236 snaps in the box, 149 in the slot, 26 out wide, 282 as a free safety. Like he was already their chess piece. And clearly I have the same concerns everyone does with an Achilles injury because they're just such sappers of explosiveness. But I don't think Branch's greatest skill was his explosiveness. It was his football IQ. Mm-hmm. And the brain is there, right? The mind is still there. The film study is still there. And yeah, he might be a quarter step slow when he comes back, and you know, maybe the man-to-man coverage of tight ends will lag a little bit while he gets his bearings again. But you know, maybe Branch is still that dude. And the answer is finding another safety. And yeah, Branch is your 100% of the snaps on the field. And then when you bring in that quote unquote nickel, it's a safety that plays the safety responsibilities, and you just continue to move Branch wherever the hell you feel like it.
I would say it's okay to have more than one chess piece though. And I think like the goal for the defense should be to be as, I guess you don't want to be as predictable as the Lions were last year. Cause we saw in the front seven, when AQM was on the field, team said, oh, okay, free lunch. Like let's run at him and get 5 yards of carry. Cause that's what happened. I think if you're talking about the back seven, like the secondary and even the linebacker, I think they could stand to get a little bit more versatile there and just getting less predictable. And so having guys that can do different things, whether it's a linebacker that can cover and attack the run, which I think there are some of those that will be available on late day two, maybe day three, getting a DB that's versatile and can move around the field. They have some of those guys that they signed, obviously, one-year deals, but those aren't long-term pieces. I think you can still stand to get – those are maybe stopgaps that can help you in 2026, but it doesn't hurt to get one of those dudes as a long-term piece, especially in a class like this that is littered with those dudes. So if one of those guys is the best player available at a certain pick, I would not hesitate to go get one, especially with the uncertainty with Kirby's knee, with Branch's Achilles. Like just having guys that can do different things, I think, is always a plus. Now, if I were the Lions, I'd still try to trade down from 17 and get into the 20s. I'm sure a lot of teams are probably thinking that same way, but I think the sweet spot for one of those dudes is probably like 70 to 95, 70 to 100. They don't have a pick there right now, so they would have to go and get one of those guys. But you're talking about some names. Like we mentioned Kyle Lewis. Birch, you mentioned Jalen Kilgore, who I think is like, what, a 998 RAS guy. Like he's super athletic. He can move all over the field. Keontae Scott from Miami, he's a demon. He's sort of an undersized nickel only, but, man, he can get after. He's physical. He's violent. Genesis Smith from Arizona. Traden Stooks from – I forgot where he's from. Wherever he's from, Traden Stooks, I think Arizona State maybe. And then Bud Clark from TCU.
Yeah,
like there are guys that can like make plays, whether it's punching the ball out, getting interceptions. Those are guys that are going to go in like the 70 to like maybe 115 range. And so if one of those guys is BPA and the Lions feel convicted on one of those guys to go up and get him or trade back and get that guy, I'd be all for it because yeah, it's nice to have some of these pieces, some of these guys on 1 year deals, but they're available for a reason. And so if you have a chance to upgrade that position, it's nice to have that like insurance policy, obviously, in free agency. But if you have a chance to upgrade and add like meaningful talent that can help you, I wouldn't shy away from that.
How concerned are you that maybe the Lions believe Derek Barnes is that chess piece, right? I mean, they constantly prop up his versatility, but like, I don't know, the way I would describe Derek Barnes is he does a lot of things, but none of them exceptionally, right? Like he does everything adequately, but like, is he that dynamic piece? And is there a problem maybe that Shepard or the Lions believe that Derek Barnes is that piece?
I mean, concerning, no, because they trust him and he's been around for years. Like, I don't think he's the pure pass rusher that maybe they envisioned he might be when they moved in that Sam role. And I think he kind of proved that last year when he played all those snaps and wasn't really getting home. It was more like effort sacks, the ones that he got. Just being at the right place, right time. And I don't think he's, you know, a great coverage player either. So if they're expecting him to move to that role, I would have some hesitations there as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think they could probably use another linebacker that can do different things. Because if you look at their three guys right now, we know Jack is an anchor in the middle. We know they view Barnes as this versatile piece, but he hasn't really proven to be that guy. And then Malcolm is really what he is. Like, he played a lot as a rookie because he had to, and then after that, he's been a depth piece. Special teams guy, maybe an early down run defender if you want to play him this year. So I certainly think, you know, if that's your trio, that's pretty predictable. Teams will know how to attack those three. So I think you need another guy there, whether it's a big linebacker or a smaller linebacker that can run, or a bigger DB that can kind of get in there and, you know, thump around, I guess. So I think they need another piece in there for sure. I wouldn't ignore that this year.
Yeah. And for the record, I don't think it's Damone Clark. Like, fine player. That's probably more of the Grant Stewart replacement. I mean, he's become over the last two seasons just kind of a core special teams player. That's almost strictly what he was when he went to a playoff team in the Texans last season. He barely played for them at all on defense. And I know he had, you know, some decent production for the Cowboys his first two seasons, but for, you know, the second half of his career here, which is still young, he's really just been an asset on special teams. And I think with Stewart going to the Rams, that's most likely how the Lions view the acquisition of Clark, just to kind of hit the final little small addition they've made in free agency.
And we didn't really address it today. I mean, it happened before the show, but the Lions sign Greg Dortch. They added Greg Dortch to the roster, which he seems to be another pretty good special team player. Am I safe to assume this is kind of the Khalif Raymond replacement, younger returner? Is this, I don't even see the price, but I'm assuming it's just a younger Khalif.
He said it himself. Okay. We just spoke with him, I don't know, an hour ago, and he was talking about what drew him to Detroit. And he mentioned obviously the connection to Petsing and how smart he is and capable at getting the ball to his playmakers. And then he was like, and once I saw Khalif Raymond signed elsewhere, I knew that the spot was open. And the spot that he's referring to is not just, you know, number four or five receiver. It's leading return man. And if you look at the way his return game has developed over the past four seasons, last year especially, like, there's a lot to like and what Dortch might be able to bring them. The Lions special teams, like, statistically probably held up fine last year, but it felt like it was below its own standard. Felt like it was lacking pop plays over the course of the season. Obviously, Khalif broke the one touchdown against the Bears back in week two, but on the whole, he had his worst season as a punt returner with the Lions last year, and like by a good margin, down to 7.5 yards per punt return. And certainly that's not solely on Khalif, but you look at what Dortch did last year. He was at a career high at 11.6, and said he felt like he was playing in that role with more confidence than ever. He's a risk taker. Not to say that Khalif wasn't, but I think, you know, he's got some sizzle to him at a younger age that he might be able to give the Lions some of that explosiveness or dynamicness in the return game that you know, they were definitely missing at times last year. And he's got tons of experience as a returner, like almost 100 punt returns, almost 100 kick returns. I think a lot of us thought that when Khalif went to Chicago, Dominic Lovett was sort of slated to fill some of that void offensively and on special teams. But certainly that looks like Dortch's role now, and we'll see what Petsing can do with him on the offensive side of the ball. But to me, I think it's even more intriguing what he brings to the special teams unit. They could use some more pop, some more jam next year.
Did a little exercise before free agency, you know, putting the hat on of the GM, and, you know, we talked about this already, like Cade Mays was maybe the obvious, most obvious move that the Lions needed to make. But I thought Dortch was a fairly obvious addition as well. Love Khalif Raymond, the person, love Khalif Raymond's story. What he contributed to this franchise is incredible, all-time, you know, leading punt return yards, two-time All-Pro, just a guy that came out of nowhere to do that. But I think it had run the course, and as Will said, right, like 7-year low, I think, on punt return average, and, you know, in his 30s at this point, like, it was time to move on, right? And that's not just a Khalif Raymond thing. That's kind of the theme of the offseason here, right, is getting younger. And when I'm going back and I'm kind of discovering what Petsing is about, and I'm seeing Dortch on the tape and how he's used, it's like, that's the guy, right? Like, it's not just the punt returns, but the punt returns is great because it wasn't just 11.6 last year. It was 9.6, 9.5 the 2 years before. Like, he's figured that part of his game out. He could also return kickoffs, so there's some versatility in his special teams role. And then Petzing really liked to use him a lot on gadgets. You know, whether that was as the target or as the eye candy, right? He's a really small receiver. He's 5'7", 180, but he creates all kind of like visual distractions when he's in motion. He's really, really quick with the ball in his hands. And I think there's going to be some interesting ways he can complement what the Lions receivers do without needing a big role. I mean, he might only need to play 250, 300 offensive snaps during the year, and he'll just have these moments where he'll have an impactful play on a third down or in the red zone. And so, when I did that play GM thing, I said, look, if this guy can be had for 1 year, $2 million, like, it's the right move. It's the right pivot at the right time for their wide receiver forward return situation. And I have to imagine that's what that contract's going to come in at.
And I like that the Lions just weren't complacent with Dominic Lovett. And, you know, they could have been, because they brought him in here last year. They were developing him, and they could have just said, all right, man, you're ready. But to go get a guy that's done it before in the return game, yeah, and can be a gadget receiver, like a number four option, like, I like that they went out and got a guy like that. And the fact that he has ties to Petzing, I don't think that should be overlooked here either, because I think a lot of us are wondering, okay, is Petzing going to bring over any of his guys from Arizona, any guys he's worked with in the past? And so to get a guy like Dortch that spent 3 years with him and can probably help, you know, translate some of the language to the receivers and other guys on this offense, I think that's valuable too. So I like the move. He's a natural Khalif replacement, and makes a lot of sense to bring him in here.
In spirit of loving stats in our chat, we got Brian Heenan in here dropping that Dortch was number five in yak since 2022 with 6.6 yards. Jared Goff is a quarterback that maximizes yak, right? Like, they're a quick throw offense. Get your guys in space, use your weapons, right? That's what J-Mo is. That's what Amon Ross St. Brown is. That's what Jahmyr Gibbs is. He just continue, and Sam LaPorta too, really. Like, it just complements the entire offense to add another guy like that to the mix.
And when Dortch was asked today what he feels like separates him from other NFL receivers, you know what he said, boys? Yak. He said yards after catch. Like, obviously with my size, I have to make guys miss, have to be shifty, evasive. Well, you know, the numbers obviously bear that out. So great stat drop there. Whoever that, who was that in the comments?
We're just going to say Brian.
It was actually Greg Dortch. He logged in under a fake name. Hype up his own.
Hype up his own. Brian. J-Mo is four. So there's the there's the other stat there. Is this your stat guy, Colton? I think we just found his ass.
I think so.
Is it Brian?
Hey, man, you're not supposed to be in the chat, man. I had a deal about this. What are you doing?
No, I'm just gonna... Hey, by the way, before we move on, I want to make sure we give a shout out. I have my my Colonel Lager here, which I'm going to crack open. Ooh, that by the way, if you're at Dog and Pony Show,
I got one too.
Oh, look at you, boys.
Cheers. I was there for St. Patty's, I guess Saturday, and had a great time. Shout out to Kyle.
He puts it on at the brewery. And by the way, for people that are there, I'm giving you a cheat code. You mention Lions Collective, you get $1 off any beer. So there you go. And we're having a live show there as well, which I'm fired.
Live
up.
Show.
Yeah, come on out.
April 9th.
April.
early April.
None of us know.
We don't even know. We might be there.
Kyle can just tell everybody in the brewery right now what date it is. We're all over the place.
Yeah,
crazy
get everyone around, Kyle, and let him know what the live show is.
Let me pivot here with just a story time, dog and pony story time.
Ooh,
Kyle texts me and he goes, hey, would you be interested in being a judge for a chili cook-off? Which might be the stupidest question I've ever received. Right? Like, yes.
Of course.
And I think we tasted like 24 chilies, which is probably the limit on chilies I want to taste. But there was some creative chili. Some dudes brought it. A dude won with a breakfast chili with breakfast sausage and bacon. There was a lamb masala Indian style chili. Oh. Like, I'm telling you, this is now an annual tradition. I don't care if Kyle's doing it. I will taste your chilies once a year. So bring your chilies. We'll do a Lions Collective chili cook-off. I don't care.
how did you weigh those like experimental chilies, we'll say, versus like the more traditional ones? That I'm so fascinated by that.
Yeah, there was, Kyle had score sheets with like six categories, and one of them was creativity. There was taste, texture. I don't remember all the categories, but look, the two creative ones won 1-2. So there was some really, really good traditionals as well. I think a traditional took third, but I don't know, man, you're gonna drop something super unique and it's tasty. You got me.
I feel like we have to submit our own Lions Collective chili into next year's cook-off.
that
might restrict us from judging out of the interest of fairness, but I think we got to throw our name in the hat here.
Yeah.
Just throw it for Will.
Justin
can still judge. Yeah, me and Birchill and Jeff will get in on the chili action. Justin can judge us.
I'm not sure my value. I would be like the Damone Clark in this scenario. I'm like the special teamer. I'm not going to contribute a lot to this chili. By the way, the official date 4/9, April 9th.
There it is.
We'll be at Dog and Pony Show Brewing.
That's going to be a mailbag show too. So hit us with all your questions. Come out live. Just start lobbing questions our way. Should be a good time.
And now for our, I guess we have 9 minutes. So for our kind of pick of the week, dog presented by Dog and Pony Show Brewing. I guess we can get into just the, in terms of the pick of the week, it'll be boxes to check before the draft, things the Lions kind of need to still do. And then you can kind of factor in there your opinion on a lot of these 1-year deals. And what does that kind of mean to you guys? What does it signal to you guys kind of moving forward?
Yeah, I want to hit really quickly on the 1-year deals, and I'll let you guys handle the picks of the week. But somebody brought this up to me today. Like, what does it say about the Lions or Brad Holmes if they're just signing a bunch of 1-year guys? I think Cade Mays remains correct, the only multi-year deal in this group. And I said, well, one, this is just kind of how free agency works. And I pulled some numbers of the reported deals so far. 122 have been 1 year, 62 2 year, 58 3 year, 12 4 year. So, you know, about half have been 1 year. Obviously, the Lions are even more lopsided than that. But, you know, if you factor in the amount of extensions they've signed, right, like those are essentially the same bucket, if you will. And I think they have 35 players of their 62 on the roster on multi-year deals, whether that's guys they've acquired through waivers or trades or signings, whatever. Most of their roster is multi-year deals. And on top of that, most of their starting lineup is multi-year deals. The two spots where they glaringly have non-multi-year deals is offensive tackle that's not Penei Sewell and edge two. And, you know, maybe those are addressed in the draft. But I think what it says about the Lions is they feel really, really good about their core. And they feel really, really good about their starting lineup. And they have flexibility year in and year out kind of move pieces around with the backups. And I think that's just what you want to be in the NFL. And so I think that speaks more than anything to their strategy here is they're plugging depth is what they're doing. And they're worried about getting the long-term guys through the draft, which they've done previously. And I think will look to continue to do in the upcoming draft.
Yeah. And they've done a good job hitting most of their needs. I don't know if their needs are the same as kind of how we view it, but if I think some of the positions that we might have discussed, edge, tackle, tight end, center, running back, like DB, linebacker, they've hit all those positions. They might not have been the player that some folks watching back home wanted, but they've at least set themselves up to where, okay, we have this guy here, we have that guy there, you know, we have this guy there, like some insurance going to the draft. But as things currently stand, like there's some positions that maybe you wish you could have had more. Like when you see a Rashid Walker get $4 million, maybe that you're like, oh, why couldn't we have gotten him for that? I understand some of that. But in terms of positions, I'd still like to see them add to, I think edge, you know, if they can get a speed guy, whether it's now or in the draft, I think that would make some sense. I still wonder if they can get like another receiving tight end in the draft. I think day three is going to be ripe with those guys. So I won't go through the line. I'll save some for the rest of you guys, but I guess edge and tight end are a couple of positions I'm looking at. And they might be fine with Conklin, but again, 1-year deal. If you can find like a younger guy on day three that can be around here for 4 years, like that would make some sense to me.
Yeah. The other thing all of these 1-year deal players accomplish is like sort of spelling out or fulfilling Dan's aim that he laid out at the end of the season to just add more competition to the roster entering camp. And Colton, I know it's a point you've made here a few times. Like they want more proven NFL talent competing for spots next year. And like, I think Conklin's a good example. Like, no, he's not going to threaten Porter for tight end one, but could he push Brock Wright into tight end three role? And could that be a good thing? Yes. And yes. And like they signed Christian Izzy. And I think we all thought, okay, well, there's your most natural slot to replace Meek. Well, then like the next day they sign Roger McCreary. Okay. There's like another clear competition in training camp. And like even the guard spots, like Mahogany is not automatically the starting left guard next year. Like Miles Frazier is certainly in that conversation. And, you know, obviously Cade as the center forces a battle to happen at guard. And so I think that they just wanted to follow through on adding players who will push each other in camp. And as Dan likes to say, sort of raise the floor of the team. I mean, obviously if we're going to start talking about draft needs, like offensive tackle is still probably the most obvious, depending on how they navigate the rest of their time in free agency as it relates to edge. I want to make this point about the offensive tackle spot. I'll be honest. I misread the offensive tackle market, and I do wonder if in some ways the Lions did as well in jumping as quickly as they did on signing Larry Borum to a deal that comes in at like $5 million. And you know, look, the three of us and a couple of others in the media room a couple of days ago were having this exact conversation. So we should like bring in our audience on this. I sat at the combine on this podcast, and you guys did as warned all the fans that cutting Taylor Decker and creating $11 million in cap space is not near enough money to sign a starting caliber offensive tackle. Cut scene. It is this year. Like Braden Smith, when healthy, which is a pretty key distinction, is a very good right tackle in the NFL, like a high level starter. And he signed for 2 years and $20 million with a playoff likely team in the Texans. And Rashid Walker, who I think the NFL world projected as like a 3 to 4 year contract at $18 to $20 million per year, signed a 1 year bargain deal by comparison with the Panthers. And I wonder if the Lions would have been wiser waiting out the tackle market and ending up with a player like Rashid Walker, who would lift their floor much more than Larry Borum, or a player like Braden Smith, who would accomplish the same thing, especially on a 2 year deal, which would have allowed them, you know, to maybe take a chance on more of a developmental tackle like Colton's boy from Arizona State, Max Ihinechor. When you sign Borum and you force yourself in some ways to find a starter in the draft, it just introduces more risk to the plan in 2026. And so I don't know, I wonder if they wish, because I do for them, that they had been a little bit more patient with the tackle market in free agency. I was shocked at how little those two guys, Walker and Smith, signed for compared to projections.
Bertie, to your point, like Braden Smith, I think, so at The Athletic, our guy Daniel Popper, he projected him 3 years, $53.5 million, 2 years, $20 million. He projected Rashid Walker 4 years, $82 million. I think it's technically 1 year up to 10, but I think the number that came out today or yesterday was like $4 million, right? And then it can get up there with incentives. But I mean, it seems like a lot of teams. I don't want to just put on the Lions. I did have an agent tell me that he thinks that the Lions maybe aren't the best at reading the market. So that's one thing, but It seems like a lot of the NFL misread the tackle market this year in particular, just because of the contracts that some of these guys are signing. So I get it's probably tough to say that they should wait on a tackle when they need at least somebody. So they don't have to, like, you know, just go gung ho on the draft, which I still think they need to do anyway. But if they did, they might be better off, but that's conversation for probably another day.
I feel like Will has found a new name to flex on that he could pronounce.
He's I don't even know if I'm saying it correctly, to be honest.
Well, I disagree. I feel like you've researched it and you're flexing on us.
No, Colton told me how to say it. Am I saying it right, Colton?
Ihinechor, I think. Yeah.
I think I'm in the ballpark.
Jeremy told me that at the combine. I won't take credit for that. Jeremy is the one that has all the pronunciations.
Shout out, Jeremy.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to go back to what Colton said about checking needs. And I'm going to once again flip to the playing GM post, if you will. And I kind of recapped at the end. I said you need to sign a backup quarterback, whether it's Kyle Allen or equivalent, at, you know, close to minimum. They did that with Teddy Bridgewater. You need the complement running back for Gibbs. I suggested Bijan. I'm sorry, not Bijan. Brian Robinson. you know, and look, they got Pacheco, right? I said sign Dortch, your number four receiver. Great, get a third tight end. They did that in Conklin. Make a strong push for Cade Mays. Boom, got that done. Get a backup offense or get an offensive tackle that's a cheap veteran with starting experiences. You got that done. So you're hitting so many of these boxes. The one that still is not done is finding the two-headed edge rusher. And I thought they should bring back Muhammad and sign Epinesa. I think very much want him as Epinesa, very similar players, right? You still need the Muhammad. We talked about this to start the whole show. If we're looking cheap, you want to throw a name out there, I'll go with Derek Barnett. 22.2% win rate last year. I think, you know, if you're looking for a veteran that can give you some juice on the edge in a rotational role, that's the name I'm going to throw out there.
Hey, J-Raj, out of curiosity, was Wanham on your edge tiers, and where did he rank if so?
He wasn't, and it's interesting. Somebody else, a reader, brought that up. Why didn't he make your tier? And I was like, it's a really good question. You go back, you evaluate your process as a writer, right? I did 13. He was in that final five that I cut off the list of, you know, just in sake of efficiency, right? But part of me wanted to put some of the bigger names out there, even though I was dismissing them, right? Like Hassan Reddick, I don't really see the fit, but like it's right. A name. And so I just wanted to put him out there, or maybe I tried to shoehorn a veteran minimum connection to the Lions staff and Tryon Schrenka, right? Like a guy that was tied to Casey Rogers in Tampa Bay. Who was that?
Or a farming.
Yeah, a little bit, right? So, you know, I think maybe in the end, if I did that post again, I would probably just lump together the guys like, here's a bunch of names that you're going to say, none of these guys fit. Here's why. Let's focus on the fits, because clearly he was a fit. He just got kind of bumped down from some of the other, I guess, names that were more on the forefront of my mind, like Epinesa.
Wait, so how many guys total did you mention?
12, I think.
All right, I'm gonna tell Wanham tomorrow during our availability that J-Rod from his list of 12 potential edge rushers. You did not.
Yeah,
make
I like it. Did it? Yeah. I'll just shut the camera off.
Is this in person? Okay, this is Zoom. Then you're good.
Zoomer,
you're good. Yeah, you're good. Yeah. Hey, but you know what? I thought today, very productive show. You know, we way better, more positive show. Hopefully, the audience feels the same. And stay tuned, because we'll be back next week to talk more about the Detroit Lions offseason and hopefully them addressing some more of those positions we talked about. Hit the like button on the stream, subscribe if you haven't already, and check out Dog and Pony Show Brewing, where if you mention us, you get a dollar off. But until next week, we will catch you all.